Kia ora Tefano, welcome back to Two Tipsy Plants podcast, where we talk plants and drink booze. My name is Sasha.
And my name is Sasha.
And in today's episode, we will be talking about overachiever plants, the most of the plant world. Some examples would be the smallest, the
smelliest.
Yes, the plant with the most color of the seed. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Most seeded plant, yes.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, as usual, we did our own research and we didn't really talk to each other before we did it. So if there are some crossovers, oh well, I guess. Yeah. But before we start, obviously, we have a wine today. It's a special wine. Not super special, but it's...
Special to you, essentially.
Yeah.
It is, well... All cards on a table. She doesn't really like Gewürztraminer, but this bottle was presented by her mother-in-law.
Yeah, it actually traveled to New Zealand straight from France, from Alsace region, because that's where my mother-in-law lives. We've got a Gewürztraminer from Alsace region, 2019, but I'll let Sasha to take over and tell us a bit more about it.
Well, you were doing so well, you could have done it.
I know nothing about Gewürz. I am not a big fan of Gewürztraminer at all. I mean, it traveled here all the way from France, from Alsace, so why the hell not?
I'll just start opening first because I can't wait.
Noise.
So yeah, it's from Alsace region. Vintage is 2019 by Jean Giller.
Oh, it's very yellow.
Give me a second.
The vine is divine.
Indeed it is. So...
Yep, it's sweet.
Besides Riesling, Alsace region is also popular for the Pinot Blancs, Pinot Gris, Gewürztraminers, and Creme de la Alsace. Special grape that they grow, I assume. And it produces the sparkling wines. 2019 in Alsace region was actually considered quite a good year.
Okay.
The vintage of Alsace was generally considered very good. The region experienced favorable weather conditions with warm and dry summer, which allowed the grapes to ripen fully and develop good flavor concentration. The wines from 2019 vintage are known for their excellent balance, vibrant acidity, and pronounced fruit flavors.
It actually smells very fruity.
Very nice. Honey.
Honey, yes.
Like, honestly, for me, it smells like a dessert wine.
It does. Yeah.
Before we start tasting it, let's smell it. On the nose, Gewürztraminer has distinctive lychee and rose aromas.
Can't smell rose, can't smell lychee, but you said honey and that's all I can smell now.
I do smell lychee. It's quite distinct, to be honest. The lychee itself. Canned lychees. Have you ever had those?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it transcribes to me. You can also find ginger, orange blossom.
Yeah, maybe a bit of ginger, yeah.
Yeah, I do actually smell ginger. Now that I've mentioned.
It's the placebo effect, eh? Like you mentioned it and you're like, actually, yes, it does smell like it.
It may have a little bit of a noble rot to it. Do you know what is noble rot?
No. Nah.
Brittiness. It's essentially when the wine is accidentally or not accidentally has wild yeast in it.
Okay.
Not like wild yeast that people like, but Brit is one of the things that introduces very potpourri aromas and flavors in wine. And not everybody likes it in wine.
Well, I don't like potpourri, so yeah. Anyway, ka-chink, let's give it a try.
On a palate, Gewürztraminer tends to be full-bodied.
Ooh, look at those legs on the...
Because it's very sugary, I guess. Yeah, full-bodied, viscous and oily, and can have higher levels of alcohol as it ripens quickly.
Okay, it's not as sweet as I expected it to be. Like, it's still sweet, but it's not super sweet. It's quite fresh.
Actually, it's a very nice Gewürztraminer. I take my head off.
Do you know what other nice Gewürztraminer there is? Ripon Valley in Wanaka.
Well, because
Wanaka.
You like the acidic things, and Ripon is quite acidic.
Well, the thing is, because I don't like Gewürztraminer because it's too sweet, because Ripon Valley is so acidic, the Gewürz that they have is actually quite, like, it's nicely balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is very fresh, like, it's very refreshing.
I don't know, maybe it's just because we had a very heavy cheese before that.
I don't know. Like, I don't mind it.
5 fun facts about Gewürztraminer. Gewürztraminer being Q due to anthocyanins found in its red-skinned parent grape, Traminer. Unfortunately,
yeah, I don't see any pink Q
in
this.
It doesn't really have a pink hue per se, but good to know that the parent grape of Gewürztraminer is Traminer.
Is Traminer.
Its early ripening in cool climates helped Kivistraminer maintain its delicate, fruity flavors and aroma. Kivistraminer's spiciness stems from the terpenes, organic compounds responsible for its complex, heady fragrance. Its hallmark lychee aroma is attributed to the linol, an aromatic compound also found in fruit.
That's it? Okay.
Yeah. It's
sorry, I lost count.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you like to start or would you like me to start?
I'm happy to start since you started the whole podcast today.
We can go one by one?
Yep.
Okay.
I will start with a Hyperion. Have you heard anything about anything that rings a bell when I say Hyperion?
No.
Anything rings a bell when I say Sequoia sempervirens?
Sempervirens. Kind of. I have a feeling that it grows in New Zealand. I think. It's not native, obviously, but I think it grows in New Zealand. But is it the redwood?
Coastal redwood.
Ah, there we go. Yeah.
Hyperion is the name of the individual coastal redwood tree located in California, Redwood National Park.
Ah, yes. It is the tallest tree in the world. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now I know it. Yes.
The height. I have divided each of the plants into subcategories. So mm-hmm. I will announce the subcategory and why. What does it go by, I guess.
So the subcategory and why you put it in that subcategory, yeah. Is that what you're saying?
So the subcategory is height for now, and mm-hmm. then we'll go on. Hyperion is recognized as one of the tallest known living trees on Earth. The exact height of Hyperion is estimated to be 115 meters. For people who prefer feet, it's 380 feet. This makes it taller than other famous giant redwoods like General Sherman tree.
I remember there was an issue of National Geographic where people were actually climbing that tree.
Oh.
And it was on the cover where, like, you see the trunk of that redwood, and the person that's climbing it is like a little ant. It's a really cool shot.
But do you think it was Hyperion or was it General Sherman?
I can't remember, but it was from the Redwood National Park in California, yes.
Then it was Hyperion because General Sherman is from a different park.
Okay.
Mm. Okay, discovery. Hyperion was discovered in 2006 by a team of naturalists and researchers led by Chris Atkins and Michael Taylor.
Chris Atkins, that sounds very
familiar. I know.
Yeah.
But it's probably because of Atkins' diet. Maybe it's just a very common surname. The tree location was initially kept secret in order to avoid damage to the tree. Like people climbing it.
Yeah, but also people like, you let someone know that there is this unique tree and everybody's like, oh, when I see it, we've got a ghost in the house.
Who let the ghost out?
What was I saying? Have you seen the news where some random idiot decided to carve his fiance's name into the Coliseum wall?
Nice.
Yeah, so imagine someone doing the same thing to like the tallest tree in the world or something like that.
I am pretty sure people have done that.
Well, hopefully not.
I would not be surprised.
It's so freaking stupid, but anyway.
Okay, location. The exact location of Hyperion within Redwood National Park has been kept confidential to preserve the tree, yada, yada, yada. This helps to prevent the excessive foot traffic or potential damage to the tree, like people carving things on it.
Mm. But I mean, also, you can always read about these things. Mm. I mean, internet. Hello? Yeah.
Growth rate. I'm sure somebody have dropped the location pin and now people
are. Yeah, obviously, yeah.
Yeah. Growth rate. Hyperion is an exceptional example of rapid growth rate of coastal redwood. The tree can grow very quickly in their early years, benefiting from the moist, foggy climate of the region. The specific conditions in the area where Hyperion grows have contributed to the impressive height. The next item on the list is fragility. Despite its towering height, Hyperion and other coastal redwoods have actually shallow root system, which is surprising for me.
I'm so shallow, but probably wide, I'm assuming, to keep the balance, maybe, yeah.
So yeah, apparently Hyperion has a very shallow root system, which, as you mentioned, yes, it can be probably wide, but still, just remembering all the pictures from the very strong winds and tornadoes and everything, trees with shallow root system usually the ones that get toppled over. And yeah, it is quite impressive that they have survived so long. Estimated to be like around 2,000 years.
Hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've heard about those trees. And yeah, it's a great overachiever in terms of the height. Right. My plant is, you've actually mentioned that in episode 8, I mm-hmm. think.
Let me guess.
Episode 8 or 9, I can't remember.
Is it Belvitchia mirabilis?
Yes. Yes. Do you also have it on your list?
I do, but I'll see if I can add anything.
Okay. So, yes, Belvitchia mirabilis. I will do my thing. Rosie. I will do my thing where I'll try to tell you what the meaning of the Latin name is as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, mirabilis, Belvitchia mirabilis. Mirabilis means wonderful or remarkable.
Oh, now that knowing that information, I'm like, Mirabel from Encanto.
So do you know why it's so why it's so wonderful? The reason I've chosen that plant is because it has the longest lived leaves in the world.
Mm. So, and it is quite enduring.
Yeah, well, the plant, I mean, you've seen the pictures and we will upload the pictures on our Instagram, but it kind of looks like if you took a seaweed out from the sea and put it on the ground, it kind of looks like that to me, like yeah. all
and
tangled.
And left it in the desert and left it shrivel.
Yeah, all tangled, all sort of seaweedy looking like. But apparently it only has two leaves. So it does look like it has a lot of leaves, but it only has two leaves. And the leaves, they just sort of split and curl as ribbons and create that appearance. But those leaves are the longest leaved of any plants. So the same pier continues to grow from the base, averaging perhaps 20 centimeters per year, about 8 inches per year. And it continues growing for the whole plant's lifetime, which can be thousands of years or more.
Mm.
So yeah, I found it quite interesting. But also we've spoken about that plant before in one of our previous episodes. And it's fascinating what kind of plants you can find, to be honest. Yeah, do you have anything to add to it?
Well, let's see. I have the subcategory endurance. Belvitchia mirabilis is exceptionally adept to surviving in arid desert environments.
Mm-hmm.
It can withstand extreme droughts, high temperatures, and strong winds. Probably it can just fly off with its long leaves.
Actually, yeah, now that you've mentioned with the winds and stuff. So they thought that the root, the taproot that the plant has, was actually to reach for the water, because it is obviously in desert. But the root is actually to anchor the plant because it gets so windy. The root anchors the plant rather than actually reaches for the water.
Yeah. Despite the challenging conditions it inhabits, with Belvitchia mirabilis, Mirabel has a remarkable ability to recover from damage. It can regenerate new leaves if its existing ones are damaged.
I wonder if its existing ones, the leaves or the curls on the leaf, you know? Because it only has two leaves, theoretically. Yeah. Interesting.
Who knows? Mm. Yeah. And then, medicinal uses. Belvitchia mirabilis has traditional medicinal use among the indigenous communities in the region. The leaves are believed to have antimicrobial properties and are used in herbal remedies to treat various ailments.
Okay. Interesting. So, yeah, that's the plant with the longest leaves.
Yay.
And one of the most resilient plants in the world, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, besides the desert rose. Yaday, yaday. If anybody is old enough, they would get the reference.
Do you want to go next?
Yes.
Okay.
General Sherman. I have already
mentioned. You son of a bitch.
Well, if I have mentioned about the Hyperion.
Oh, no, actually, no, sorry. No, I don't have that plant. No, I was thinking about something else. Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
If I have mentioned about Hyperion, I can't pass by General Sherman. General Sherman is essentially the same variety,
same species
as Hyperion, but it is Sequoia dendron giganteum.
Oh, Sequoia dendron.
Mm.
So it's not a sequoia, it's actually Sequoia dendron. Interesting.
Apparently. General Sherman is the largest known living tree by volume, not by tallness, not by how high it is, but how much volume it has.
The trunk or like the whole tree?
Tree and trunk.
Okay.
I mean, the height and the volume. I'll elaborate on that in a second. It is a sequoia tree, like it is in California Sequoia National Park. Size and volume. General Sherman holds the record for being the largest tree by volume in the world. The tree stands at an impressive height of approximately 83 meters, which is 275 feet, which is less than Hyperion.
It's still a tallest tree.
And has a circumference of 31 meters.
Baobab is just smoking in a corner.
31 meters. What is it? Just to put it into perspective, I can't put
it's
it.
It's more than a five-story building. Like the small pool is 25 meters, swimming pool.
Mm.
So it's more than that in circumference. Mm.
Its estimated volume is around 1,400 cubic meters. For people who can't put it into perspective, it is around 743,000 kilograms. 750 tons.
Damn.
Yeah, one car is 2 tons.
That's a lot of cars.
That's a lot of cars. Now, about the age. While the exact age of General Sherman is uncertain, it is estimated to be around 2,200 years old. It makes it one of the oldest trees on Earth. You know,
one of the, but not the oldest.
Do you know what is the technique used to estimate the age of the trees?
Well, obviously not the little circles on the trunk, because you actually have to cut the bloody trunk off.
Yeah, you don't have to cut it off. You can drill.
Or like do a sample, biopsy, call it that way.
Well, let's call it a biopsy, but I think it's still going to be probably not illegal, but in order not to damage the tree and introduce any pests, they probably did not do that, hopefully. But yeah, you literally take the core sample, which is like, what, a centimeter in diameter or 5, and just like drill until the center, and then you can just count the rings from that center.
Okay.
And you can also do the carbon dating from the center of the tree itself, which is probably one of the better ways to do that. But
yeah, it's interesting how would they do that without damaging. As you said, without damaging and introducing pests to the tree, because obviously you are drilling a long as
hole.
Yeah.
I mean, to think about it, some trees grow around poles and things, and some trees survive the lightning strike and have a hollow part inside the tree. So,
yeah,
they are quite resilient. It was called General Sherman after the American Civil War Union General William Tecumseh, William Sherman.
Yeah.
The tree received this name in 1879 to honor the general's role in establishing and protecting National Park.
Nice. That's cool.
I'm just going to do the summary to compare the Hyperion and the General Sherman. Hyperion holds the record for the tallest tree, which is 115 meters, and General Sherman is 83 meters. Hyperion is taller than Sherman, but volume-wise, General Sherman is more. Age is approximately the same. They are located in two different parks. Sherman is located in California, Sequoia National Park, and Hyperion is located still in California, but Redwood National Park.
Cool. Thank you, Redwood. I actually have the oldest tree in the world on my list as well. It's actually further down my list, but
It seems appropriate.
Yes, I might actually talk about it now once I find it.
Give me a second.
Vino.
Divine is divine.
So how old did you say the Hyperion was?
Estimated to be 2,200 years old.
And that's a sequoia.
Mm-hmm.
So Methuselah is the name of the oldest tree in the world. And it is estimated to be 4,854 years old.
Is that the one in the desert?
I think so. It is called Pinus longiva, and longiva means ancient or aged.
Oh.
Yes, and the tree grows high in the White Mountains of Inyo County in East California, Eastern California, actually.
Look at California doing all the old stuff.
Yeah, I hope I pronounced it correctly, the Inyo County.
Inyo County.
So it is also recognized to be a non-clonal tree. So it is a tree of its own that wasn't cloned from another tree.
Mm.
And yeah, apparently there is like a biblical reference to it that Methuselah, who lived to 969 years of age, somewhere from the biblical reference. Yeah, and hence the tree is called Methuselah as well. It was, so Methuselah was sampled.
Oh.
It doesn't say the way that it was sampled, but it was sampled in 1957 And in 1957, it was 4,789 years old. So obviously now it's a little bit more older.
Shit. That's impressive.
Yeah, so it was sampled. And I'm assuming it's still alive because it says it is the longest living plant in the world. But yeah, it comes from California as well. Look at that. How many really cool trees come from California.
Until the Yellowstone explodes. All right, let's go to the next part, I assume.
Well, yeah, you go.
I will do...
Actually, hold on, sorry. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll just do another plant because it is very closely related to the same topic.
So, take over.
So that was the oldest living tree in the world. Do you know what is the oldest living tree in New Zealand?
It's going to be something either Totoro or Kahikatea.
Not quite. It's actually a kauri. It's a giant kauri.
That's surprising because there is a kauri dieback at the moment, so it's surprising it's still alive.
So, yes, the tree is actually threatened, considered to be threatened by kauri dieback in 2018. But the tree's name, the scientific name is Agathis australis. Do you remember what australis means?
From Australia?
No. Australis means from southern hemisphere.
Okay.
Yes, it is a giant kauri tree, as I've mentioned before, and it has the name.
I forgot it's something Maori.
Yes, it is a Maori name. It's called Tane Mahuta.
Yeah.
And that translates to the god of the forest. So the tree is a remnant of the ancient subtropical rainforest that once grew in Northland Peninsula. So it is in Northland. Yeah, and the giant kauri are found nearby. There are other ones. There is a Te Matua Ngahere. Yeah.
Yeah. How old is that one?
I'm not sure, it doesn't actually say that.
Does it say anything about the Tane Mahuta?
Yes, so Tane Mahuta is estimated to be between 1,250 years old and 2,500 years old. So I'm assuming it's never been sampled.
Mm. Well, yeah, that will be just based on the estimates of how fast do the younger trees grow.
Possibly, but it's still, I mean, New Zealand is a small country, so it's probably easy to estimate the oldest living tree in New Zealand. But yeah, Tane Mahuta is the oldest tree in New Zealand, which is a giant kauri tree. Yeah.
My next group of plants will be the smelliest plants from the border.
I know the plants that you'll be talking about.
Yes. Well, I'll just reveal the names of both of the plants that I'm going to be talking about. One of them will be Rafflesia arnoldii, and the other one will be Amorphophyllus titanium.
Which is the corpse plant.
Sorry, Amorphophyllus titanium.
The corpse plant.
The corpse plant.
What about the dead horse plant? Because that's very closely related.
I can't remember how it looks like.
It looks disgusting. The corpse plant looks much prettier than the dead horse plant. It looks hairy. It looks like a...
So yeah, why I wanted to mention the names of both of the plants is because they actually, when you look up those plants, they sometimes not cross-reference each other, but they're confused by one another.
So the first plant, is that the red, the big red flower with a hole
well,
in it?
Well, yes. I'll start by the first plant. Rafflesia arnoldii. Can you take your book and see what does that mean? Don't tell me it's going to be like, it's discovered by Arnold.
No, let me see. Just start talking, as in start elaborating, I'll find the...
So yeah, Rafflesia arnoldii is a parasitic plant found in...
Oh, it's a parasitic plant, okay.
It doesn't have any leaves. It is found in rainforests of Southeast Asia, particularly in Indonesia and Malaysia. So, what does it mean? I see that you've been laughing.
So, it's not discovered by Arnold, but what was the scientific...
Rafflesia arnoldii.
Arnoldii. So it's not quite what it is in here, but most of the similar sounding Latin names are, like the meaning is the same. So apparently Arnoldii is connected with the Arnold Arboretum in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. There you go.
So discovered by Arnold.
Well, no, it's just in that Arnold Arboretum, sorry.
So yeah, this plant is parasitic, found in Indonesia and Malaysia, and it is famous for producing the world's largest individual flower. For people who don't know how it looks like, imagine rotten meat, and now...
It suddenly looks like a flower.
And now it looks like a flower, no. So, and now, like, imagine a donut made of, out of meat, and it's, like, very big, like, a meter in diameter. And there are, the petals are essentially meat chunks.
Yum.
Yum.
The flower of Rafflesia annuodia can reach up to 1 meter in diameter, and the weight, several kilograms.
Damn.
Yeah, it has a unique appearance with large red maroon petals and a center filled with a spike of warts. Rafflesia annuodia produces the world's largest single flower, both in terms of size and weight. Oh yeah, actually, I do have the kilograms. Yeah, the weight is 11 kilograms. That's a lot for a flower.
Yeah.
It just looks...
But you don't want to eat it though, because it stinks.
No, but maybe you can cook it. I don't know if anybody tried.
I don't know if it's edible.
No. Some exceptional specimens have been reported to reach even larger sizes with a diameter of 1.5 meters and the weight of over 11 kilograms.
Nice.
I
will challenge you to the smallest flowering plant in the world.
I thought it would be an orchid, but because there are some like very small ones.
No, it's not. The plant is actually called Wolffia globosa. Guess what globosa mean?
Ooh, is it like... circular.
Yes, spherical. Around, pretty much, yes. It is a species of flowering plants. The common name is Asian watermail or duckweed.
Ah.
It's a water plant. It lives in fresh water bodied.
Fresh body of water?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. It pretty much is what it describes, like a watermail. So if you dip your hand in to the water with those plants, it just is like little tiny green globes mm-hmm. that you can pull out. They are oval shaped. They have no leaves, stems, or roots. So they just float in the water. The body of the plant is transparent and sort of green, and it is less than a millimeter wide.
All right.
And so Wolffia globosa has been described as the world's smallest flowering plant. So
never seen it.
Apparently, flower. It flowers. I've never seen the flower either.
But you can find it everywhere in stormwater drains here.
I don't know.
I've seen it.
It's native to Asia and is found in parts of Americas and Africa, where it is an introduced species. But yeah, it is the world's smallest flowering plant at 0.1 to 0.2 millimeters in diameter.
Maybe it was not particularly that particular variety of a species. All right, that was interesting. Thank you, Sasha.
I just thought I'll sort of, because you were talking about the biggest flower.
The gigantic ones.
Yeah, I'll talk about the tiny one. Yeah.
All right. So my second plant is Amorphophallus titanium, also known as a titanium aurum or a corpse plant.
Oh, the very stinky one, yes.
Yeah. It is also known for producing one of the largest flowers / inflorescences in the plant kingdom. So inflorescence and the flower is a different thing.
Okay.
The flower is what we perceive as a flower, as regular.
A pretty thing.
a pretty thing, flower. Yeah. Inflorescence is combination of different types of, combination of smaller flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So that phallic thing that you see in the titanium plant, like just that.
So it has a
pillar,
lot of tiny flowers on it.
That's a lot of tiny flowers.
Oh, okay.
And the thing that looks like petals on that thing is a modified leaf.
So very similar to sunflower.
Mm.
So in sunflower, inside are the inflorescences, little tiny flowers, and the flower that's outside is a modified leaf. Oh yeah, that's cool.
Can you assume what is the highest, what is the tallest recorded titanium?
I would say 2 meters plus.
Close enough. Can reach heights of approximately 3 meters, and the circumference is about 3 meters as well.
Oh damn.
Mm-hmm.
That's big.
Yeah. But once again, flower is something that we perceive as a pretty thing.
Mm.
Let's refer to it as that. And inflorescence is arrangement or a grouping of flowers on a plant. It is the structure that holds and presents multiple flowers in coordinated manner. The inflorescence can be composed of individual flowers attached to a common stalk or can consist of clusters or branching arrangements of flowers.
Cool, so it's not only the stinkiest plant, it's also the biggest inflorescence.
Mm.
That's cool. That's really cool. I will probably carry, sort of continue. But yeah, let's talk about the biggest. Do you know what is the largest seed in the world? There is this plant called sea coconut, or a double coconut. from Lodoicea family. It is actually the only soul species in the family. It's called Lodoicea maldivica.
So what does it mean?
I'm assuming maldivica means Maldives. From Maldives or Maldives region, maybe. It is obviously a palm. It is like a type of a palm. It actually hits quite a few of the most points. So one of them is...
So it is an overachiever in overachieving.
Pretty much, yes. It produces the largest wild fruit so far recorded, weighing up to 36 kilograms.
Hmm.
So although they say that your pumpkins and watermelons can be heavier, but pumpkins and watermelons are grown by people where the that double coconut is actually a, like a wild fruit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, the same fruit is the slowest to mature. It requires 8 to 10 years to mature.
Nice. That's why they're endangered, I assume. Are they?
Actually, I'm not sure if they are. The seed, so the fruit weighs about 36 kilograms, as I mentioned before, but the mm-hmm. actual mature seed weighs 17.6 kilograms, weighing up to 17.6 kilograms, and it is the world's heaviest. And Lodoicea is the most efficient plant known at recovering nutrients from moribund leaves. So, yeah, it's a palm that has one of the biggest seeds in the world.
Nice. Looks like booty.
Kind of. There is a double coconut, yeah. But there is this picture of a person carrying it, and it's like 4 times bigger than the person's head.
Is it edible?
I assume it is. It doesn't... I haven't actually researched if it's edible or not.
But while you're thinking about it, since you mentioned pumpkin, do you know what is the heaviest pumpkin?
Like recorded in the world? Yeah. No.
1,200 kilograms. That's a car.
A small car, yes. That's like, but a, like a ton. A ton point two? Damn, that's a big ass pumpkin.
Mm-hmm. Grown by the Matthias? Wyoming. Why people have to have such weird names when they're botanists or the plant growers or something? Matthias Wilhelmijns. Sorry, Matthias. Of Belgium in 2016.
Nice. Right. Hit me with another plant.
Choose one and I'll hit you with
it. Choose your fighter.
Choose your plant to be hit with. We've been talking about this plant probably for several episodes at this point, but it is pento.
Oh, pento, as yeah. in the growth.
Growth. And the Poplar tremuloides.
Yeah, but it's because it's
a grove. Yeah, it's a forest.
Yeah.
Yes, the size of the pento is 43 hectares and the combined weight is 6,600 tons.
So to elaborate a little bit on it, it's not one single plant. It's actually a clone of the same plant.
So yeah, pento is also known as a trembling giant. It is a remarkable clonal colony of quaking aspen trees located in Utah, USA.
Mm. Another one from US.
Mm-hmm. It is a single organism that is connected by a vast underground root system. So if you think of how your mint spreads, that's how that tree spreads, essentially. Yeah. Yeah, it's quite impressive. It is estimated to be around 80,000 years old.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually quite beautiful as well. I saw the pictures of it and it looks quite a nice, like, forest, call it that way. Yeah. But it's fascinating how it's actually just a clone of the same tree, pretty much.
Why I wanted to talk about it is like, last time I've been driving with my friend to a site visit, for some reason, we just started talking about what kind of, because you know about how people are trying to steer away from being buried in the ground and find other alternatives.
As in when they pass away.
Yeah, when they pass away. And we were like, what would you like to be? Under which kind of tree would you like to be buried? And what kind of tree would you like to be, like, essentially, what kind of tree would you like to be? And I'm like, I would like to be a pando tree because I can take over the whole bloody continent. And she's like, my gosh, you have such a male complex.
Yeah. There is actually a burial type that is like they bury you under the tree. But yeah, it's a whole different topic. It's a whole different story. But,
what kind of tree would you be?
I don't know. Okay. I have a tree. Actually, not a tree. It's the most brilliant blue seed in the world.
Brilliant.
Funny enough, it comes from a palm tree as well. So do you remember Madagascar, the cartoon?
Mm-hmm.
there were these palms that looked like a massive, palm,
mm-hmm.
as in hand palm,
yeah.
With like little kind of spoon-looking like leaves on mm-hmm. top of it. So that palm is called Revenala madagascariensis, obviously meaning from Madagascar.
Mm-hmm.
It is endemic to Madagascar, also known as traveler's tree or traveler's palm. And it has the most brilliant blue seeds
world. Quite blue.
Yes. So the main pollinator of the palm is...
I like to move it.
Me more.
Yes.
King Chulin.
So apparently this is one of the greatest examples of co-evolvement of the two different species. So the lemurs and the palm, they kind of co-evolved together. The lemurs are one of the few animals that can actually perceive the difference between green and blue.
Oh.
So hence they're very attracted to the blue seeds of the palm. And obviously the palm actually evolved to produce blue seeds so that lemurs will eat it and distribute it. So they would do the same thing as like the, I can't remember the name of the animal that eats Kopilawak coffee seeds.
The wildcat.
Yeah, so it does the same thing. It would eat the seed and it will...
Excrete it
and the palm spreads that way. But also there is a roof lemur, which is another common pollinator of the palm. And it has like a long muzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And that long muzzle sort of co-evolved to go into the long flower of the palm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you seen Natural Discovery Channel at some point? And there was video/program about the bird who is very into blue color. And it just builds nests with a lot of blue things.
It rings a bell, yeah.
Yeah, because it attracts the female. So that bird needs to be introduced to Madagascar. That will definitely spread the seed more.
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'll just add another plant because mm-hmm. I should have actually spoken about that plant before the Revenala palm. This is more to sort of add to your pendo growth.
Add to my pendo growth.
So there is a larger living organism, which kind of looks like a pendo in terms of it's a copy of the same plant. It's a clone of the same plant. It's called Posidonia australis. Again, what does australis mean?
From the northern hemisphere?
Boy. from southern hemisphere.
Yes.
Also known as fiber ball weed or ribbon weed. It is a type of a seagrass that occurs in southern waters of Australia. So in 2022, a single strand in Shark Bay was reported by scientists to not only be the largest plant in the world, but also the largest organism by square size.
Shit. What is the size by square?
So the plant covers around 200 kilometers square, so that's about 49,000 acres, and it would make the largest known organism in the world by area, exceeding the size of a colony of Armillaria ostoi fungus. Yeah. So the plant is estimated to have taken at least 4,500 years to grow to the size by using rhizomes to colonize the new parts of the seafloor. So yeah, it's pretty much like pando, but underwater.
Under the sea. All right. My last plant is a loner plant. Well, I have called it that, but kind of makes sense, I guess. The plant that typically grows at the highest altitudes is the most champion. Silene acaulis. This small perennial plant is found in the high mountain region of Arctic and Alpine regions around the world. It can be found growing at elevations of up to 6,000 meters and above the sea level. Moss campion is known for its cushioning growth habit, with tight cluster of pink or purple flowers. Its ability to survive in extreme alpine conditions, including cold temperatures and low oxygen levels, makes it remarkable. And yeah, it's just surprising that the plant can survive that high.
Does it kind of look like a moss?
It is a moss, yeah.
Yeah, I did start reading about that as well. But I couldn't find... So if you start looking for the sort of the plant that grows at the highest altitude, it just says moss. It doesn't say which particular moss, because apparently there are other mosses that grow even higher than what you've mentioned on Mount Everest.
Mm.
And also they...
On Mount Everest.
Yes. And they keep finding them higher and higher, because obviously due to the climate change, the climate becomes warmer and warmer, and the plant kind of is able to grow even higher and higher.
Mm.
Because there isn't that much snow as well. I will... Did you finish?
Elaborate. I did finish.
No, I didn't want to elaborate. I'll actually add to it, because I have on my list, I have the highest altitude flowering plant. It is called Eremogon bryophylla.
Sorry, that was a wine break.
Eremogon bryophylla. So do you know what bryophylla mean?
Of course I do.
It means moss-like foliage. Moss-like foliage.
Moss-like foliage. Okay.
Yeah. It is a flowering plant in the Sandworth genus. It occurs in Himalaya of China, Tibet, Nepal, and India. And it is the highest known flowering plant, occurring at as high as 6,180 meters. So slightly higher than
so
what
you
mentioned.
So you beat me by 100.
No. In feet, that would be 20,280 feet tall. But yeah, it's like a plant that kind of looks mossy with a small five-petaled white flower. Yeah, it's kind of cute.
And here is to everybody saying that size doesn't matter. Well, height.
Right. Do you have any more plants?
No, this is me.
I will...
We can talk smack if we have time.
I will finish our conversation with a New Zealand plant. It's a very short section, but I found a plant that is the rarest plant in New Zealand. It is called Genera Hamiltoniae. I could not find what Hamiltoniae mean. Probably it was discovered by some Hamilton. It is a creeping herbaceous plant with clusters of small leaves that are about 2 to 7 centimeters long, forming a dense mat. Small green flowers are followed by red berries in autumn. It is one of the rarest plants in New Zealand, with Southland and Stewart's Island representing two of the suspected 5 remaining natural habitats. Natural fertilization of these plants is now difficult, as the male and female plants are separate. But it kind of looks like little brown mint leaves in the sand.
Yeah, like somebody decided to pluck the leaves and drop it.
Yeah, yeah. It is a shame that it's like the rarest plant in the world in New Zealand. But yeah. On the picture that I'm looking at, it looks like it's growing from the sandy ground too. But yeah, so I guess that covers the world of overachiever plants. What would be your favorite one? What were you the most fascinated to learn about?
I think I really enjoyed learning about the smelliest plants, because they're always fun.
You like plants with fragrance, though, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Be it good fragrance or bad fragrance.
I mean, I do have corpse plants in my garden.
Mm.
Like, it is currently wintertime, so it died back, so...
Yeah.
No photos, guys. But yeah, I have a smaller species of the Amorphophallus cognac.
Yeah. I really liked the Ravenala palm. The one that has brilliant blue seeds, because I found it quite interesting how it co-evolved with the lemur to pollinate it. Yeah.
Well, that was very nice and knowledgeable, and the wine was nice and beautiful. I'm surprised that I actually enjoyed Gewürztraminer, because...
It's still not my favorite plant. Plant. It's still not my favorite wine.
It's not my favorite plant either.
Yeah. Can you imagine wine growing on trees?
Like, yes, actually, it's
wine.
Grape.
No, I mean wine bottles, you know.
Oh, that would save so much time for people bottling it.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, that's a wrap on Two Tipsy Plants. Thank you for getting tipsy with us today and joining in on our plant loving shenanigans. We hope we have inspired you to grab a glass of wine, maybe a bottle, no judgment here, and give your leafy friends some extra love. And maybe your fairy friends as well.
Yeah, furry friend, calm down.
Yeah, you've been very eager today to be a part of a conversation.
Yes.
If you would like to help our podcast, feel free to follow so you don't miss out on our next wild and tipsy adventures. And don't forget to spread the word.
Keep it green.
Keep it tipsy.
Yay!
Yay! Two tipsy blinds.
Blinds.
Signing out.
Outro.